This is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. Violinist and composer Josh Henderson is a classically trained musician who has a vision. As a member of the group Warp, he is taking classical music in a new direction, a new wave of modern. And their recent release entitled Sermon of the Matriarch reflects those changes with an eclectic fusion of classical, jazz, hip-hop, country, funk, and many other musical languages. Sermon of the Matriarch features the poetic lyricism of rapper Liquid. Last week in part one of my rather laid-back conversation with Josh Henderson, we ended our show with the topic of the shades of fame. Today, we move on to the legacy that Warp can leave the world with a birth of a new genre. I'm really interested in film music, and I recently went to Brooklyn Academy of Music to hear this amazing evening with the orchestra Alarm Will Sound. And I was so turned on. Three short films, the composers were there, this orchestra comes together playing this unbelievable music to really choreograph the film. I mean, that was so awesome. Is this something you're interested in? Is this something that Warp will do?
Oh, yeah. Actually, if you go back and watch the tape and zoom in on the second violin, I was subbing in the group for those shows on that tour, which is super, super fun.
I love that.
Oh, man, it was a blast. That's an excellent, excellent group. But yeah, because like we've been saying, the more senses you can kind of get into this musical experience, like you see all these orchestras doing Star Wars, Harry Potter, but like that concert with these three short films that you're not going to see them at AMC.
No.
Probably.
No. This is high art house.
But they're all three just beautiful films. And the music that the composers wrote was also super amazing and tailored to the film. And I talked to the composers on that project. It was pretty collaborative, which is something that in a big budget movie you don't really get that much. But definitely this type of stuff we're super, super into. And there's actually a big suite on the album called Gimme That, which Mikkel, a pianist, wrote to a 1903, I can't bring the date, but an old public domain silent film called The Great Train Robbery.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a very important film in terms of like a lot of things. There's like fourth wall breaks, and he describes that piece as like the antagonist on the album. So in the show, we had the movie projecting and then played the score to it. And his kind of riff on that, and like, you know, we have this album with Afro-diasporic folklore, and the train robbery, he kind of subverts the music, so there's a lot of like Detroit house and like kind of hip-hop vibes and stuff like that kind of going on, and trance music for this like very, very, very old film. And he's got some other things that kind of tie it into. Definitely something we're interested in.
And that was just a passion project that just kind of came up?
Sort of. He was commissioned to do it for another iteration of it by the Schubert Club and St. Paul, Minneapolis area. And very cool. I was just watching some of the people's Instagram videos or whatever from the show, and to see this like old film and this like very modern sounding music with like drums and stuff like that.
I think we're going to see more of this as time goes on, Josh. It's so interesting to me how some major orchestras were denying getting involved in playing film scores while the film is being shown. I know I sat on the board of an orchestra, and they were like, no, we're going to play all the big major classical works.
Yeah.
But yet you see a Star Wars film and the film being run sell out immediately.
Yeah.
Ticket prices in triple digits
is
becoming the norm. As you say, it's a collection of the senses. And I think that this is where we're going now. You talk about social injustice as being a centerpiece of what art forms are really about right now. And it's so important because we all need to be reminded, right?
Yeah.
And I think the art form of music has to have that stability of being able to show us what is truth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're never going to stop making, and they shouldn't stop making movies about the Holocaust and like slavery and
all
these things. Like, people can be like, oh, we've seen it, but like, no, because look at what's happening, you know, now. There's still these things happening. We need to be reminded that of, you know, what humans can be capable of, like the negative and also, of course, the positive too, showcase that. But yeah.
Very exciting what you're doing with Warp. Tell me, what is your own personal high in your music making?
I really just love live performing. Like, that's such a special thing. And it's really intangible. It's really hard to describe for if there's non-performers that are listening. But it is a special thing where it's like, I'd imagine maybe it's similar to like how a baseball player feels when they're like at a game. all those players can hit when there's no crowd, like, no problem. But then when there's, like, tens of thousands of people, and it's just, like, it's like an energy that, like, can't get it on Zoom, which is why that didn't really work when we were doing that during COVID. I love listening to recordings, and I love recording, too, because that's a special, it's a different type of thing that you can really, really get, like, go in and perfect and add effects and do all the things. But something about that live performance with people, and not necessarily like 1,000 people, but like a small room with 5 people can have a very particular and special energy.
Yep.
That's not necessarily better or worse than playing in an arena. So I think for me, just like, I just love performing live for human beings. and those are always where I feel like the highest for myself.
That's a wonderful answer, you know. You talk about the differences. I mean, you're right, there is such a different energy in recording. And I know sometimes even when I've recorded, I'm not in the right place. Mm-hmm. I will just hate myself for every take.
Oh, yeah, and the voice too. Like,
Yeah, and the voice starts to wear, you know, and of course that recording picks up every flaw. But it's about that central energy you're talking about, that life energy. And you're right, there's nothing like a live performance because it'll never be captured again.
Mm-hmm.
The flaws, the mistakes, the wonder, the everything that happens is so incredible. It's just that moment in time.
Yeah.
You know, all these wonderful historical performers we look back to who didn't have recordings. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine when we hear the folklore, it must have really been truly incredible.
Oh, yeah. I think about it all the time. Like, to be like being at the world premiere of Beethoven 5. Like, that must have been
Can
insane.
You imagine?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Beethoven Beyonce, I'm telling you. They got it going. So in your group, Warp, is there an alpha member? Is there a top dog?
No, I mean, sometimes I tend to do the most emailing.
when it gets down to the mundane. Okay.
Yeah. But that's just, I can be a mundane type of guy. And, you know, we all have our strengths. I'm pretty good at shuffling papers around in my spare time. So I tend to do that. But we all have different kind of rise to the forefront in different areas. So, like, you know, someone might be in contact with, like, Rick about a gig, and then I'll make the itineraries and the boring stuff, depending on kind of where things are coming from. At different times, you know, people have different things going on. So, like, basically, or just, like, life stuff happening, so it's like someone needs to take on a little bit more at one time. So yeah, we definitely share a lot of the
That's good.
Responsibilities.
You share the load. I love it. It's equitable. And where do you guys record the most?
This last album we did at Octavin in a studio in Mount Vernon, Ryan Straber's spot.
I do not. This is interesting.
Oh, it's wonderful. And Ryan's like a savant recording engineer. They do a lot of big, like, kind of classical stuff. So this was really fun to do this album and be there with Faye, like, rapping. It was super fun to see that in that space. They have, like, a wonderful piano, wonderful engineer. Mm-hmm. And usually that was, like, kind of this, we had the Phenotypic label is supporting it, so that was awesome. Like, our last album we did, our COVID album, we all did in our bedrooms, and we... which, you know, sounds pretty good for that. You know, we had a buddy mix it, and then... In the past, we've done a lot of recording just, like, on the road.
Wow.
Like, we're in Chattanooga. It's, like, as you know, it's hard to find time with schedules, and people have very busy lives freelancing and doing other things. So if we're on the road, and it can be, like, all right, we can knock out a couple of days of recording here in Reno or, like, Chattanooga or something. And usually find a cheaper studio. And it's always an experience, too. Like, oh, we're going to, like, we're in this place. Let's, like, do this, like, now.
When you're together, when you finally have that precious time together. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the energy is hot. I mean, let's face it. That's when you do the best work. You know, you're busy on the road, and let's do it now.
It's got to have a rhythm going and playing the tunes or whatever. And that's the best practice for us, just like being on the road and just doing things a lot. Nothing quite like that.
You know, some of my own recording artists who I teach vocally talk about literally composing and recording on the travel buses between gigs, and they get so much done. You know, they're still in that flow. You know, this is something a lot of other classical artists don't appreciate, that you guys out on the road, how you work. You know, the whole protocol is completely different. Well, this is so cool, Josh, to talk to you, you know, so intimately about what makes you work, you know, and what your real musical highs are. So tell me, you just had a big presentation of this new album, January 9th. It was at the Brooklyn Art House, mm-hmm. and you did a live performance. Tell me, how did it go?
It was great. It was super, again, like we talked about those highs. This was one of them. It was super sold out. Definitely some amazing fire code breaches, but I kept on taking out seats to like sell more tickets at the door, and it was great to have, again, not the biggest room, but just like, you know, 100 plus people just really crammed in there, and you know, are so many friends and wonderful people. Mm. We had our friend Kayla Williams do an opening set, and she herself is she's a violist, you know, Juilliard trained violist, but writes music and does like folk music and sings. So her and a bassist did like a duo set with Camille Vogelhaus, sat in, another wonderful violinist. So that was like a wonderful just like starter off of the evening, and like musically, and just like, you know, all friends and fans and people's families came out, and yeah, very, very fun time.
That's great. I hope it was a huge success. You know, is Warp's intention to perform in unusual venues rather than the big concert halls?
We definitely do a wide berth of venues, mm-hmm. which I think is very fun.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons, like we're about to go on tour like next week, for a few weeks, and on that run, we have, you know, we're doing some stuff out in Moab for their little kind of winter festival.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think we'll play at like a, you know, their concert hall there, do some school stuff, some other jazz club, and then moving on, doing like a coffee shop in like Grand Junction, and then doing something with the Wyoming Symphony and doing their kind of outreach education stuff and breweries, and then some stuff in South Dakota. I don't even know, but that definitely keeps it interesting, and also, like, you know, the different types of folks come out to different types of places. So I think having that variety is great for us. Also, just, you know, to get used to, all right, how can we present this in a rowdy bar? Can we present this in like a very quiet, you know, concert hall with a very dedicated listeners, and like how can we, you know, adapt and change, you know, our like talking points and just our vibe and mood to make sure that things work in different places, because you can't always, you know, plan out stuff in like life. So if we can replicate that, I think that's wonderful.
This is real.
Yeah.
you guys are definitely real. How many albums do you have out?
I think we have, so like, we have like three like real albums, like full mm-hmm. length. And we have one little EP that's early, and a couple little albums of like covers that, like, you know, people sometimes get into that stuff. Those are like just kind of for fun. We do have an album that's in Dropbox, just chilling, but on like Spotify and stuff, there's like three real ones. Circadian Vibes, Warp Trio's Pandemic Disco Fantasy, and then this new one, Sermon of the Matriarch. That was our COVID album.
I love that. I adore that. So if you have to describe to all our listeners what the main element or the mission of the Matriarch is, what would that be?
That's a great one. It's a little bit education. It's a little bit empathy, and it's a little bit it's very like girl power-y, I would say, in a lot of ways with Faye's words, and also some of the non-lyric parts from what they're inspired by. Like the last track is based off of the like the Assata Shakur poem To My Mama. So we hope, you know, we're never trying to like beat people over the head with like stuff, but we hope that like people you know, hear the music, hear like the lyrics, see the titles, and then are inspired to dig a little bit deeper on their own and find some kind of connection with this material. And also, like, so just very, very quickly, like, this kind of grew out of, you know, reading some text. I think I was reading a book on, like, witchcraft. And I was there for the mysticism element, like the voodoo witch stuff. But then in reading the book, I was more, you know, the point of the book was, all right, we label these people, women, as witches when they were just, they just had like opinions. And like, we just took that, you know, we press them and like subjugated and cast them out as like some kind of evil other, rather than, you know, having equal footing and like listening to them. And, you know, and I just thought that was like, oh wow, we do that with so many types of people. Like, and when there's like power imbalances and stuff like that, like racially and like age-ally and like, you know, genderally. So it's kind of growing out of that, you know. There's a little bit of like the kind of mysticism element, and, you know, Faye leans into some of that with like some of her culture. She's like from Gullah Geechee parts, but really it's about that, like really digging into like how we treat people and how we or mistreat people, and why we do that, and how can we not do that, but just like listen to folks who might be different than ourselves in a different, whatever, social, financial, whatever standing, and respect them. So that's, you know, when one digs into the material, what we kind of hope folks get out of it. But yeah, might take a few lessons, and we want folks to kind of come there as much on their own as they can, because there's only so much you can be like, well, you should do that. We're not trying to finger wag, but
yeah, you're not preaching.
Open up stuff. Yeah.
You're just laying out the groundwork for everyone to have their own interpretation.
Exactly.
But to be educated, I mean, you know, to present this as an idea, and which is so important. Everything you're doing with Warp, this is the whole mission statement of the group, I think, is really fascinating, Josh Henderson. I think it's really worthwhile. You guys, your pedigrees are fantastic. But yet you've come, like I said before, you know, you've come into this little circle of faith, and you're sharing that, and that empathy. You used that word earlier, yeah. And that, my dear, is what it's all about right now. We need to revive that within all of us, whether you're a man or a woman, or trans, or, you know, I mean, for everyone. And certainly with what is happening right now in Los Angeles, and all of us feeling really fragile.
Yeah.
For a moment, we need to remember that we have our music and we have our art, and that means everything. Wow. Well, this has been very illuminating talking to you. And I know the last time we spoke, you were about to run off to another gig, and you were like between recordings, and it was like the insane life of a real gig artist, which I adore. But I've got you now on a Sunday, and I've just got a couple fun questions to ask.
All right.
All right. The first one is, if you were allowed to have a dinner with someone who has passed from this earth for one night, all yours, and you know what? You can invite more than one person, but who would it be that you would want to dine with and talk with for one evening?
I would say the recently passed Quincy Jones would be a dream to dine with. For his own like history of, you know, connecting just a crazy birth of individuals and artists across like genres and like time periods and, you know, all these different places. And also just, he seems like just like such a great story
guy
teller, and yeah, a great guy, and like doing all kinds of stuff. Like, I was.
You're right there doing all kinds of stuff. What would you want to ask him, Josh?
I might just be like, hey, man, can you just talk about something? Like, tell some ridiculous story about Michael Jackson, I don't know.
You know, so would I. I would want to ask him exactly about his work, all those years with Michael Jackson, and just life, right?
Yeah.
And he has his own interesting past. I mean,
oh yeah, he lived a life. Like, he did
so
it.
So did his family. Oh boy, yeah. The people who came before him and his family were really something. Wow, that's exciting. And that's it. You'd be fine with Quincy Jones just for the night?
That'd be a great one. Let me think of some other folks. There are some people who are maybe not like the nicest of people. I wouldn't want to like. like a dinner with him, but I'm just so curious. These megalomaniac figures throughout history, like someone like Napoleon or something like that. I'm just like, what? Just to be like, all right, you're all right, man. You've been dead for like 700 years. Like, what? What's your deal? Like, what's
like,
problem?
Who are you? What did you have in mind?
Yeah, which is, you know. Maybe they chilled out in the afterlife, but there
I
is,
love that.
Yeah, because I think that now about certain people, but now, you know, with, you know, hundreds of years of, you know, all right, whatever you try to do that didn't work out, it's just, I'm so blown away by some of these, like,
wow,
the audacity of some of these historical figures.
That's really interesting. That is really interesting. I mean, it's such a good point. As long as you don't choose the Marquis de Sade, I'm fine. But
yeah,
you know, but yeah, Napoleon, I mean, Cleopatra. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
There are just so many who I'd love to sit down with on a roundtable discussion. Wow. And see where their head was really at the time. I guess it's all relative, Josh.
Yeah.
I love that. And is there one word or phrase which really defines who you are from the depth of your soul?
I think something around like enduring or persistent.
Yeah.
Like I would not call myself like the most like naturally talented or whatever person, but you know, I think just like kind of chugging along.
Yeah.
is a good thing to be like, you know, just kind of consistent work. And it's like maybe not as attractive, you know, especially for young kids to be like, all right, well, you just got to practice your scales every day and like eventually like you'll be good or whatever, or things will work out. But but yeah, that kind of resilient, just, you know, plugging away type of
I love it. You're such a working, nice guy.
Well, thank you.
You are. But, you know, you hit on something interesting there. Classical musicians are trained that we have to go into the practice room and stay forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
You found that maybe if you back off the pedal on the gas, maybe other things come to you. Is that something you might, and I'm not saying that you actually back away from the discipline of your art, but I'm saying, asking, if is that something you would impart to young people right now? That
oh, yeah.
Sometimes over-practicing can kill the art.
Definitely. I think, you know, something I wish I could have done better is like, you know, practicing smarter and not losing sight of just like the world around you. Like you can't always be in the practice room. We do need to spend a disproportionate amount of time as musicians, like perfecting things and getting things to a certain level so that we can communicate them well. And that does take time. But you know, the smarter, you know, you can go about it, you know, practicing slowly and with intent, the quicker you can get out of there and do other things that are important in life.
Life, just the finding the balance of life and happiness and not living with angst, you know,
yeah.
as so many dedicated musicians do. Well, Josh, I want to thank you for spending time with me because it's always illuminating with you. It's so real, and you do have such an immense amount of empathy and intuitive knowledge about the music business. I adore it that you're sharing that. And all the best to you and all the members of WARP. And just to remind everyone, that's W4RP, which I love.
Yeah, and online, W4RP Trio.
Trio. Like
Spotify and all that stuff. Warp Trio.
And is that where we can find your music and your latest recording, Sermon of the Matriarch?
Yes, all the should be on all the things by now.
All the things.
Tidal, Deezer, whatever's out there.
You know, to old people like me, I'm always wondering what all those things are. I'm constantly searching, trying to deal with Spotify and all the rest. But hey,
oh, there's too many.
Well, I think Warp is going to lead us further along the road of evolution.
Thank you.
Challenge our thinking about music and where we stand and how we listen to music and marry it up with social injustice. Josh Henderson, I want to thank you for being on Center Stage just to impart that importance. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap it up here?
Just thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
It has been authentically cool, Josh, and come back anytime. And I wish you and all the members of Warp and all your audiences to come and anything you're working in to have the most fantastic success, and I'm sure it will. And just be a beacon for classical music in the future, okay? An expression. This is so great. Is there a website that we can visit on your behalf, Josh?
Yeah, we're online at just w4rpmusic.com.
Okay.
And also, I think we have the domains for warptrio.com too. So if you forget that, but
okay, to all my listeners, go out and discover these guys. It's pretty incredible. And I hope we get to meet soon, Josh, in another incredible venue.
Likewise. Thank you.
Take care, and thanks for being on Center Stage, and all the very best to you. To everyone, please visit Spotify and find Warp Trio and certainly Josh Henderson's work. And I want to challenge everyone to really look forward into classical music and see all the changes that are happening and embrace them, because it's a whole new world out there, and it's not bad. It's pretty good, I have to say. So thanks again to Josh Henderson for being my guest. I hope my listeners will go to centerstagewithpamelacoon.com for more shows like this and to find the complete unedited version of this interview. And the audio will be found at WGCH Talk Radio in Greenwich, Connecticut. So to everyone out there, I'm asking you to stay safe. This is Pamela Kuhn. And the curtain is now down on Center Stage.